So 3.5 trillion current GDP. Hopefully next 5, 6 years, 7 years, maybe another 3.5 trillion coming. And again, we should pause there. We will add in economic output in the next 6, 7 years what we have cumulatively done in our first 75, right? So these are transformational moves. And in India, it's happening digitally first. So if you do the math, digital penetration, and so by 2035, hopefully 10 trillion digital penetration can go to 25 to 30%. So 2 to 3 trillion of market cap coming digitally. I would argue it's a revolution. And in a revolution, you can either deny it, resist it, participate in it, or co-create it.
Hi, and welcome to Matrix Moments. My name is Rajinder, and I'm joined today by Avnish, Sid, and CV. Guys, thank you for doing this. Why don't you all introduce yourself? And also, we should talk about the event that you all are hosting today, DCII, which is Digitizing Consumers in India. We should include links to the report that comes out. It's a great, you know, event, great report that talks about a bunch of trends in consumer tech in India. Would love to learn, you know, more through this podcast. Today's podcast is titled Indian Consumer Tech Coming Back to Life. Over to you, Sid.
Hi, everyone. I'm Siddharth Agarwal, based out of Delhi. I've joined after 2 operating stints, one at Paytm. The other one was at Ecom Express, where I led strategy. I've also been a consultant in the past at the Boston Consulting Group.
We forgive you. Well, they are our partners, sorry.
for the past 16 months now, I've been at Matrix here. Very fortunate. Thanks, Avi and BS, for that opportunity. I lead our consumer tech investments along with my colleague, CV. I focus on B2C marketplaces, which includes product marketplaces, services, travel, mobility, amongst other sectors. Really looking forward to this episode today, and would hand it over to my colleague CV for his introduction.
Hi, my name is Chandrasekhar. Everybody calls me CV. I recently joined Matrix as well, so been listening to this podcast from the other side. Now I'll judge myself on how this podcast actually goes. Recently joined, like I said, at Matrix. I look at consumer brands, media, and social. I come with more than 10 years of experience. So started my career at BCG, moved into Foodpanda, part of the leadership team there. Moved into Ola once the acquisition happened. Did two startups of my own. One which was B2B services. We should discuss that. Why B2B services? A D2C foods brand. Then joined Glance in Mobi, where I launched another 4 D2C brands. So something that I've loved doing over the last 10 years, consumer through and blue. Happy to be here. Happy to be building this out with you guys.
So guys, you've been saying for a while that, you know, the consumer tech opportunity is exciting. It's coming back to life. CV, you should talk more about why, you know, kind of title this podcast as such. But at the same time, you're also, you know, meeting a lot of experienced founders, operators who are breaking out of companies. And it sounds like many of them are a little apprehensive on consumer tech versus, you know, perhaps your own impression of the market opportunity. So why is that? What have you heard? Where is the dissonance? What do you say?
So Rajinder, since I've joined, I think I've met more than 100 people in the Delhi NCR ecosystem. Amazing set of people out there. People who've worked in different unicorns, people who have a great perspective. When I talk to them, they're very excited about starting up. But more often than not, there are questions on their mind that I'll try and address here today. The first one, they talk about consumer tech companies not having very good capital efficiency. They take examples of the large e-commerce marketplaces that were built in the country, and they say that $10 to $20 billion have already been spent in this space. And in terms of profitability or suitable unit economics, I think they're still a while away. The second thing is that they question the depth of the market a lot. While we talk about all the macros in place, 1.4 billion consumers on the whole, 700 plus million people who are internet enabled. But in their minds, they talk about a 10 to 20 million consumer base, which they believe is monetizable. Beyond that, they question the willingness to pay. Third one, this is sort of the weird one, where they say they're just too tired. They've been at it at a problem statement for maybe 5 to 10 years now. And they just want something new to keep them excited over time. We'll obviously discuss each of these points over the podcast. CV, what have you heard?
Well, I made the mistake myself. So my first startup was in B2B services after working in B2B services for the longest period of time. A lot of it comes down to familiarity. I think in some form breeds contempt, and people just don't look at it with a fresh pair of eyes. I've heard this so much that I've now started classifying this as ghost of consumer, past, present, and future, right? Well, the ghost of the past is, look how much money each business has spent, you know, so much capital has been lost and stuff like that. Ghost of present saying, you know, no business is making money, which is false. A lot of our portfolio companies are already EBITDA positive, so it's great to see. And ghost of the future saying, you know, customer will not pay. Now that I've, I want to say, taken a different sort of view to the entire piece, I can see that all these are, maybe the ghost of the past is true in some form. Was necessary to, I think, also create the market, get us to where we are. But I believe that the belief that the founders have on ghost of the future, which is customer will not pay, I highly question that. And with the level, with how quickly the markets are deepening, I think we're going to be very surprised on great outcomes in the future.
No, super. I couldn't agree more. And just layering on top of that, Siri, in the midst of all this, with the same narrative, Meesho got created. DealShare got created. I know we were going to talk about Mamaearth got created in our portfolio. Country Delight got created. Mosaic is getting created. So I deeply empathize with the tiredness. I have felt it as a VC. But I think my parting advice on this is, in, and this is something I learned from one of the our US counterparts, that in these kind of businesses, you can say founder, you can say market, timing is everything.
Yeah.
And to give up at this time is exactly the wrong time. This is the time to actually build these businesses, because the market has deepened. All the ghosts of the past are true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd say also, like, just thinking about the last 3-4 years, you've had COVID, where a bunch of folks, you know, didn't really go out shopping. What they bought at home was very different from what they would have bought previously. Now that markets have reopened, people are going back out. But then, obviously, there was a little bit of an income shock for some period of time for the broader markets. But the economy is doing really well. So, in some ways,
sorry to interrupt, Rajendra. I think for the audience, because when we put this together, we also took a step back and said, "Oh wow!" I think we should over these last 5-6 years. What are all these drivers that have fallen into place that, when they come together, is a big multiplier, right? All the ones that we've been discussing.
Yeah, actually, maybe just narrow down and talk about some of the large opportunities you all feel are out there. Like, what are you all excited by?
I think there are multiple opportunities out there. If you think about the Indian consumer, there are different cohorts out there. During the course of the DCIA report that we've done with BCG, we've covered new cohorts, which are 35 plus women, tier 2. And there are multiple such other cohorts that are out there. So I think if you go down to a customer cohort and build after them, there are plenty to talk about. Few which are top of mind that come to my mind, two or three themes that I've been spending some time which excite me right now. One would be the verticalization of marketplaces. I believe that across different verticals, the current incumbents in the space do not solve for either parts of experience, right, which is very, very bland and more search-based. There are new ways of discovery that are needed. So there can be a 10x value prop that you can deliver to the end consumer, solving their pain points. There are supply side interventions in terms of a different supply chain that you create. It may be in the form of exclusive supply. It may be in the form of a different kind of supply for tier 2 or tier 3 audiences. And I believe you need a good fragmentation of supply at that. So few categories that come to my mind, I think home decor is definitely top.
Yeah.
It is not very well penetrated. There is some value creation that we've already seen in pets, and I remain optimistic about other such categories in the future as more and more categories unlock and the shopping behavior comes online. A second one that I can think of, which is sort of related to the first one, is the entire new commerce models. People have enough assortment that's available online, but people are not really getting the offline-like purchase experience that they want, right? Some people want touch and feel. People want to be, people are quite social. They refer to their friends for tips on what to buy. So whether it's live commerce, influencer-led commerce, are a few models that I see big promise in. Third is the overall rise of D2C brands. There are 5,000 plus brands that are already out there. And tech talent is scarce. So there is a big opportunity that we see in terms of different technology components that can be built. We at Matrix already are backers of GoQuake, MoEngage, and a few others. But chat is another opportunity that is popular in Southeast Asia. Loyalty, the new age of distributed commerce, which is bringing commerce to wherever the attention is of all the consumers. I think these are a few that are top of mind. Goes without saying that this is nowhere close to an exhaustive list.
Yeah, I think let me just bring back the previous point we discussed, right? Will the companies that are going to come up in B2C look exactly like a Flipkart is today or a Mamaearth is today? And I think the answer is no there, right? Primarily, if you expect another large marketplace to come up with the same kind of cash burns, I don't think that's what it's going to look like at all, right? What the better way to look at it, and I think some of it's covered in our DCI report as well, is what are the trends that are changing? What are the tailwinds that are happening, right? And I prefer to look at it in three dimensions. One is demographics, right? And that's where I get most of my optimism from, right? Just the fact that young TG, premiumizing, 80 million households that will get more than 10 lakhs of annual income by 2030, right? So can it premiumize? There's a younger TG, there's an older TG, above 40 who need a different set of brands, different set of services. So if you take those cuts, I think you should be most excited by India to build, right? Where else are you going to build? So many things are changing. Technology, everybody has a phone, internet access. So the first thing I would look at is to say, when all of this changes over the next 5 to 10 years, where are the largest pools of opportunity that are going to get built? And how can I, as a founder, who's exposed in some form to consumer psyche, create the best value out of it, right? So that's one big trend on demographics. The second piece is things around how shopping itself happens. I think a lot of it is still very PDP page driven, not very high on engagement, discovery, that touch and feel that you were saying about offline, right?
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are tools that will come up to just make that really real for an online purchase as well, right? So I think there's a different kind of commerce that will come up. It's not just going to be influencer commerce. This could be video-led commerce. You could potentially even see AI come in and create a completely different sort of shopping experience, right? The third part is a slightly differentiated way to look at this. That's to say, if you've got these ton of D2C brands, the suppliers coming on and suddenly servicing the consumers, right? This actually means the opportunity to create a truly differentiated product is even higher, right? Why does that happen? Your distribution solved. In a large form, your backend delivery and all of that is pseudo solved in some form. So the best product wins, right? And the best product means the founder who has the closest insight to the consumer, who spent time on the backend researching, truly passionate about it, I think can really create large opportunities, right? This also means that a lot of enabling technologies, now this could be like a GoQuake sort of piece, but I think there's also a lot of front-end and mid-funnel changes. By that I mean, your 1% conversion that happens on a DTC website, can that be 3%? What are the kind of tools that can enable that sort of a handheld journey to move from a top of funnel to the mid funnel to the bottom funnel, where the consumer truly feels, hey, I've experienced this brand, I like this brand, I'm getting more and more aware of what it does, and can your conversion be 3%? I think those are major unlocks, right? So if you look hard, I think there's a ton of value that's going to get created.
Super. These guys are the experts, so I have nothing to add on this. I'm just going to go back to the previous question and set for the founders who are tired and burnt, we should also keep context on what's changed in the last 5, 6, 7 years, right? You guys mentioned mobile. So mobile number one, Jandhan mobile architecture in terms of, you know, KYC, logistics costs in India, you would know this better. It used to be 14-15%. For e-commerce, it's very critical. It's now at 11%. The plan by the government in Gati Shakti is to bring it down to 8-9%, right? These are big deals. GST created a national market. UPI went to the next level during this period. Demon helped. COVID tech-enabled everybody. WhatsApp exploded. So, again, going back to creating all these things is this macro that is just completely turned different. And I'm a bit wary that that's not fully understood when people are wary of starting businesses.
And I'll add one other point to the list that you put up, which is 4G plus video.
Yeah.
And especially short video content, which has just taken off. And honestly, the way brands have leveraged short videos to create, you know, new disruptive communication is truly what's separating them from the traditional brands.
Correct.
I was also, you know, intrigued, said of the all the themes that you spoke of, actually all of them have a COVID connection. So home decor, pets, influencer commerce, and then offline brands going online. All of them were an outcome of basically what happened over the last 2-3 years. So in many ways, I think lots of exciting trend lines which one can look at. I'm going to switch gears. Tell me, like, a lot of folks who you meet, should they be building in domain, a domain that they understand well? Should they, you know, broadly because they come from the consumer tech space, should they, you know, kind of pick something within consumer tech? Or, you know, many of them, like you said, you know, are kind of tired of it, so they're now thinking about, say, a fintech startup or something outside of the domain that they understand best.
If you ask me honestly and probably being very selfish here, I would want all of them to build in domain.
Yeah. And just on that, you have to stack odds in your favor. You are taking a big risk in life. Do you want to play to your strengths that you have gained over many years?
Yeah.
Or to find out new areas of weaknesses?
Yeah.
Agreed. Fully agreed. And Ravi, we've done podcasts on this in the past, which were that on the experienced founders in the FMF. I think we've covered a lot of those podcasts and a lot of these points that come out of this research that we've done over time. But I mean, you can only do so much, right? We can give perspectives. We can talk about all the things from our point of view. For people, eventually, there are people who decide to pick other sectors. And I believe for some of them, that's also important because there are new sectors which no one has done. So eventually, if there's a new sector that they find exciting, we would want them to create value for the consumer.
I'm going to pause you there for a second, Sid, because we've thought a lot about this. And you know, the ones that have done that piece best, is it's a sector of adjacency to something they were doing.
Yeah. Correct.
So if you look at GoQuick with Chirag, he was in D2C, he was suffering from RTO, so he started a business with all that. That, by the way, comes to FMF and experience around the product. Yeah. That's fine. It may look like a different domain, but it's again somewhere where you have a disproportionate edge in the thesis, right?
Completely agreed, Abhi. I was coming to the same point as well. That it's about this business is about stacking odds in your favor. You have to understand what's your unfair advantage. How well do you understand the business or the set of consumers that you're trying to serve? Is there a supply or a demand edge? Is there a go-to-market edge that really sets you apart? So the closer you are to areas of domain that you've been associated with, I think the higher your chances of winning. For people eventually who do not have come from that background, which may be totally sunrise sectors, I would say my personal point of view would be to make it up by surrounding yourself with people who've been from that domain. So if you know domain experts, please hire folks that are smarter than you. You should not be the smartest person in the room if you're building out in that domain. And for those people who eventually plan to break out, that would be my advice. Stevie, any points of view?
I'd be a lot more brutal to my B2B and fintech colleagues. No disrespect to whatever they're doing. But since consumer is the is where majority of my experience lies, there's a certain romantic nature about building a consumer business, right? You really need to love your consumer. You need to really understand them. What they see, what they say in an FGD or talk about in a review is not actually what they think, right? And people who've operated in this segment, it's just intuitive. Like, you are looking back at what are they actually saying? What does that really mean for my product, for my business, or my service, right? It takes years to sort of hone that. And every time I talk to, let's say, anybody from Unilever who's got 10, 15 years of experience, you'd see that really shine, right? You'd see them really be able to articulate and say, oh, you know, I never thought about this market that way, right? To start in a domain outside of that and leaving that intuition expertise aside, you're not doing yourself any favors. And a lot of that is a lie to yourself, right? I don't understand this sector really well, so it must be easy to solve. I think that's a mistake that people make quite easily. Once you start opening that sectors, when you know, there are smart people everywhere. Yeah. So anybody who has an edge on having done that for 5-10 years, will just start off at a different point and then take off to a completely different level.
That's a great point. You know, in business school, they talk about decision-making unit, and you know your decision-making unit here and you want to switch that unit to somebody you don't know.
Yeah.
So Sid, we started the podcast talking about DCII and this report that, you know, the team is putting out in partnership with BCG and part of the objective was to identify some of these opportunities that you're referring to. So tell us more about DCII. What can founders, you know, look to in terms of resources? What are some of the ideas that came out of the work?
So, BS, after talking to all these founders, we realized that we need to put an end to this. So we embarked on a study with BCG where we spoke to about 250 plus founders and operators to understand where are the opportunities really, right? Cover the future of the Indian consumer tech. Is there really value to be created? So this report is sort of covers three parts. The first part is it covers the macros of India. We talk about the GDP growth, the resilience of the economy, the size of price, sentiments of the founders. So across the founders, we ran surveys and try to understand what areas are they optimistic about in the future and what areas would be watchouts. We've uncovered that there are 43 unicorns in the country in consumer tech, believe it or not, $250 billion of valuation or value creation, $54 billion of primary funding. These are big numbers. And all of this happened in the last 5 years. The second part is the trends. So we see that the time spent on social media is going up. Relevance of omni-channel is going up. I think there's a 6 to 8x increase in the number of founders who believe that that going offline and exploring other channels is important to success in the long run. We covered new models in commerce, generative AI, ONDC, which are significant tailwinds as entrepreneurs explore new opportunities. The third part is for learnings of the entrepreneurs in the initial journey. In the initial stage, how should they think about GTM, product market fit, areas that they should go after, some nuggets around that. And we've discussed this in our podcast earlier around Infinity Entrepreneurs. How do you take the company forward towards profitability in the long run? How do you expand? How do you think of loyalty, customer centricity, repeats, cross-sell, upsell, channel diversification, key strategies for profitability, etc.? All of this is going to be covered in the report.
Since the report also covered some topics around macro, what's the outlook for 2023? We've published a bunch of podcasts which are more both look back and look forwards. But anything else that you'd like to add, or Avi?
Let me take that first. You know, this is a topic I can't speak enough to or about. So we keep speaking about this, and we want to keep speaking about it until it happens. So 3.5 trillion current GDP. Hopefully next 5, 6 years, 7 years, maybe another 3.5 trillion coming. And again, we should pause there. We will add in economic output in the next 6, 7 years what we have cumulatively done in our first 75. Right. So these are transformational moments. And in India, it's happening digitally first. So if you do the math, digital penetration, and so by 2035, hopefully 10 trillion digital penetration can go to 25 to 30%. So 2 to 3 trillion of market cap coming digitally. I would argue it's a revolution. And in a revolution, you can either deny it, resist it, participate in it, or co-create it. And we are very lucky, and we want to co-create with the founders. So I just think, again, ghosts of the past, forget. Let's look at the future. It's really bright. And we are very blessed. I've said this before, off the record, that I would pay to do this job. I think we're just very privileged to have this ringside view and the ability to co-create.
Yeah. CD?
Completely agree. It's part of the allure to joining investing as well. Just to be able to see all this value creation happen, it's going to be a lot of fun. I just have a couple of call-outs here. I think you can always look at the past again and say that's what it's going to look like and be pessimistic. But I urge you to sort of reverse that a bit, right? And look at it to say, what is the full potential here? And then you'd say, and then you'd think, are we saying in future also Indian consumer will never pay extra for premiumization, quality, or service? I really don't believe that. I think that's already changed in the top 1 to 2 million households in India to a large extent. We are behaving like a global household in all forms, right? Will that translate? Absolutely, yeah. There are companies that I've met who are able to get anywhere from $300 to $1,000 from villages outside of Haryana for content. Who would have believed that people are saying, ki content ke liye I'll give money, right? So I'd urge that perspective to say, if you look at it slightly differently and say, I'm going to make sure that just about value I'm giving consumers, not take too much money, then obviously you'll say it's super thin, right? And your customer will still see that price to quality. But if you reverse that and say, you know, consumers are also becoming more and more mature. Their needs are maturing. Their demands are increasing. Can I charge a premium for it? If you go in to say, yes, you can. I think you'd be quite surprised to say, you know, how much can you actually take off from these households? So, look at it optimistically, and I think you could paint a picture that looks very different.
You know, just on one example of that, and honestly, internally, I think we as Matrix are also negative. But quick commerce, for example, is playing out better than most of us expected. People are paying. People are paying delivery charges. People are paying. So I think that's an example where if you are always, you have a rigid view of the consumer who's actually evolving very dynamically, you'll get some of this wrong. Yeah. Right.
Agreed. I personally, with Avnish, what you said, I'm a big believer in the India macros and the resilience of our economy. Very excited as the economy moves from the fifth spot to the third spot over the next decade. And India actually is one of the few bright spots in the global economy. Tactically, I see multiple examples of people actually paying, right? If you think about all the loyalty programs in the country, we've got Amazon Prime, multiple people paying for that. They've got a good ecosystem. We met other companies in the marketplaces who have loyalty programs. Think about Urban Company, people, more than a million consumers pay for that. So I see there is appetite. The Indian consumer wants the right value to be delivered to them. And there are multiple opportunities and examples where you can monetize them. Other examples, I mean, we've recently opened our office in Gurgaon, and we see 137 apartments worth more than $1 billion that got sold in 3 days. Luxury.
And that's connected to us opening the office.
Sid himself drove 10 of those closures.
Luxury car makers, I think, are at an all-time high. Their sales are higher by 50%. And overall sales of electronics grew by 23% since last year. So I already see it playing out. And with the GDP doubling over the next 10 years, I couldn't be more excited about building in consumer tech.
And that's actually just to give some, you know, counterparts or analogies from other markets. When you're going through this middle income journey, so our nominal GDP grows hopefully at 13-15% because it's inflation plus real GDP, right? Typically, in Maslow's hierarchy, as you're going into things like what you said with luxury cars, even I saw that statistic, they grow at 3-4x that rate. And if you compound that over 10 years, there's an unimaginable number. That's why the $1 billion gets sold.
It's basic, like Maslow's hierarchy is one, but the consumer staples basket versus the consumer discretionary basket.
Correct.
The discretionary basket will just keep increasing. And within that discretionary basket, in our own portfolio from previous funds, we've seen Better For You was a big trend. Now, I think you were talking just before this that Better For Me, the equivalent of that is Better For The Planet or Better For Everyone.
But also, it will become premium also, Rajendra, because earlier we said there's no market at premium. I think we'll see premium and luxury also.
Yeah. So definitely value. Indian consumer will pay, but value. Closing thoughts, I guess, Avi, maybe on this one from you.
I am an evangelist of digital nation building. Like I've said before.
Actually, I have a closing question here, Avi.
Yeah.
You've obviously seen so many years of this. I'm sure there were multiple times where you said, I'm optimistic. This is the time when it's going to go up. What is different this time?
No, I did. Yeah, very good question. So, other than 2018, 2018 was the first time we felt it, or I felt it. And I will tell you these drivers that were falling into place, payments, logistics, GST, you were starting to see that and companies actually getting real revenues. Some of our companies, if you look at their December 18, December 19 run rates versus December 22, it's mind-blowing. It's like 30, 40, 50, 100x, right? So the previous ones, I was pessimistic. So I've seen this in 2010-11, 2014-15, and maybe 2017-18 a little bit, where one could see that growth was being pulled forward by giving out subsidies and discounts, but the fundamental drivers hadn't changed. Now the fundamental drivers have changed. So therefore, optimistic, but growth still gets pulled forward. See, everybody sees the same data. So they all want to win at the same time. So that does create issues. But I think it will just ride out these cycles. And then these kind of times, I've tried to emphasize this before in the podcast me and Rajendra did. people think this is the worst time to start a business. This is actually the best time to start a business, because if you are a differentiated team with an edge, others won't get funded. One, two years ago, everybody was getting funded. Look at now, we hate the fact that layoffs are happening, but that also means abundance of talent is coming into the market. The cost structures will be different. So it's actually one of those times where we were with one of the celebrated founders yesterday, and he said, "Isi time mein hum sabse zyada moves karte hain." And these are those times.
But then you also foresee the LTV CAC curves to change. Like, how do you think?
But actually, because there's less money to spend, CACs are already dropping versus last year, right? And if your point on premiumization and customers willing to pay is true, LTVs are also going up, which we are starting to see, because when you switch off the convenience, that's when customers miss it, then they pay. We also, again, in a time of abundant capital, you don't switch those discounts off.
Absolutely.
And therefore, you don't even know what the real behavior is, right? So I just think much better times to build real businesses. Otherwise, you get false sense of security and PMI.
Yeah.
Super.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.